what's up? Welcome to the OKB's podcast, episode 7. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adioye. Joining me this week is a very special guest at Bodacious Chase. I don't know why. I did like your Twitter handle instead of your actual name, but Chase Williams, Bodacious That's Chase. Good. I don't know what you prefer. Yeah.
That means that my handle is becoming synonymous with my personality. The brand.
Yeah, I'm trying to get at your level.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you've got a bigger following than I do.
Barely. Like, I have no reason to have a following. In fact, most of my following is probably, like, friends and family.
Same here. Like, there was that one day I saw you were like, dude, tweet these hashtags out and you'll get, like, 1,000 followers. And I saw you doing that.
Oh,
and
dude.
I was like, that's tempting. But I abstained.
Oh, yeah. Like, to be fair, I only got, like, maybe probably 10 to 15 followers. And they're all, just random, something. Like, either bots or whatever. Like, for the record, for the people listening, Twitter has this weird, like, SEO community. I don't know what to call it, but basically if you like tweet out anything with the words marketing or social media or advertising, public relations, any kind of thing kind of like this, then you'll get some random followers.
Yeah,
and they're like
up.
The kind of followers that you don't want if
said,
you like
yeah,
to interact
you
with your followers like I do. So yeah,
well, I just want to thank you for having me on the show, man. I've kind of talked about this a few different times whenever I get to pop up on a gaming podcast, but I've had a my own show for a little while, and we don't really get to dive deep into gaming just because my friends aren't really as into it as I am. So anytime I get a chance to be on a show and really talk about video games, it's just like total fantasy of mine because I got into podcasting because of video games. So I appreciate you having me on your show. I've checked out your podcast a couple times. I really like what you're doing over on your website, so I appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah, man, thanks for coming on. I'm really glad to have you on because actually you're one of the people that I'd say that like helped me get kind of motivated in this, because when I first started the website, actually before I even started OK Beast,
yeah,
you were there kind of like helping me along, giving me some support, and helping me kind of like find an idea of what I wanted it to be. And so yeah, I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate you being there to support, and yeah, like you're one of the main people, which is why I do what I do. And so
I appreciate it. No problem.
Oh, yeah. Chase, for the people out there listening who might not know you, who are you? What do you do? All that good stuff.
Yeah, so my name is Chase Williams. I live in Austin, Texas. I just recently graduated school about a year ago. I work at a small developer here in Austin called Hellfire Games, and I'm an associate producer. I basically work there. We're like a 6-man team, and so I just wear a lot of hats, kind of running around, we just released a game recently called Big City Stories, which was kind of like a big milestone for me. It's like, holy crap, I feel like a legitimate developer at this point, even though I feel like this whole time I've just kind of been pretending like I know what I'm doing, you know? But my major was international relations, and I wrote my capstone paper, which was like 25 pages long, over the video game industry in the academic field of international relations and why it needs to be considered a little bit more. So I've kind of always been a lifelong fan of games, and then I studied them in some small capacity at school, and then I just recently was lucky enough to land a small role in the industry as well. And yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Bodacious Chase. I love to talk about video games. I'm one of those weirdos who's like finding hashtags and trying to reach out to people just to get conversations started. So if you ever want to talk to me about games, feel free to hit me up.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And definitely, like, if you like reading about games, check out Chase's stuff. You have like a personal website where you post like a bunch of like of your own stuff, own like pieces.
Yeah, I have, so bodaciouschase.com you can go to. I haven't updated it in about a year. I did a lot of writing last summer while I was just out of school, and I was searching for a job, and so I was reading through some, you know, I was in an academic mindset because I just finished my capstone, and so I just basically continued my research outside of school and posted like articles on this webpage. So they're a tad dated, but there is some stuff that I'm proud of on there. So if you are interested in reading about video games from a more, I would say, methodical perspective, like I got really into ludology, which is just the academic study of games, and that's sort of the perspective I come at video games. So if that interests you, bodaciouschase.com is where you can find that stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, and I definitely recommend it because his stuff, a lot more, I'd say, cohesive and a lot more better written probably than the stuff you found on OK Beast. And yeah, like you helped me with my writing every now and then. I haven't sent you anything lately, but like when I first started, I sent you. I think you helped me rewrite my Ratchet and Clank review.
Yeah,
and like you tore that thing apart, which I very much appreciate, because yeah, like you never realize like all the things you can do better until other people point it out.
Yeah.
And you definitely helped me like see a lot of things that I could do better.
Yeah, that's awesome, yeah, man. So I would go to the writing center at my university a lot, and they would do the same thing. So it's always mm-hmm. fun kind of just getting to help out, and you do need those extra set of eyes. So, you know, also like once again, if you want to find me on Twitter, I will also help you proofread stuff if you want me to. I like to proofread, so.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, if you're new to OK Beast, this episode is a little bit different. This is episode 7, and it's not going to be a regular OK Beast episode. This is going to be our inside the game spoiler cast. And so if you haven't played Inside for Xbox One and now on PlayStation 4, then you might want to skip out on this one or go play Inside and come back. And I definitely recommend you play Inside. It's a very quick game. It's not a full price game. It's $20. And so definitely check it out. 3 hours long. You can probably get it done. Maybe 4 hours on your first playthrough. I don't know. But check that game out. Play it. Complete it. Come back. Listen to this, because we're gonna spoil the living mess out of Inside. All right, and so I don't cuss, by the way, but you can cuss if you want to.
Okay.
Some people think you can come on here and you can't cuss. You can go ahead and you can use whatever.
I have a pretty dirty mouth, but I'll try to dial it back.
Oh yeah, I don't cuss on the show because I have people that look up to me. So the children. I used to work at a youth group, work, but I used to kind of volunteer and stuff. And
I'll keep it clean for them. Sure. Say what's up, youth groupers.
What's up, youth group? And so, yeah, we'll talk about Inside. First, to get things started, what are your thoughts on Inside? Your, like, base level thoughts. And so, like, your impressions. Did you like it? What did you go in thinking? What did you come out thinking? All that good stuff.
So, I played Limbo back when it came out. And while I wasn't as in love with it as most people were, I still thought it was an amazing game. And so, when Inside was coming out, and even announced a couple years ago, I was intrigued. I knew it was going to be a day one buy for me. I played that game, and when I finished it, I put it down, and I instantly knew that that was one of the most incredible video games I think I've ever played. And it sounds hyperbolic, but I've played through it several times now, and I've tried to pick apart a lot of details to back up that opinion. But I truly think Inside is one of the most special games to have come out in the last 5-10 years. It is easily my game of the year. I think it is a masterpiece. I think it's my favorite game of this generation so far. I hold this game in very high regards. And that's honestly why I'm so excited to talk about it on this show, is because I feel like it's gotten kind of the short end of the stick in some other conversations around the internet. And I think there's a lot of detail that people are missing out on that I would like to highlight in this episode. So apart from just thinking it on like a critical level, thinking it as an amazing game, it was also a game that once it ended, the experience, my first gut reaction was, what the hell did just happen? Like, what the hell did I just see? And I haven't had that kind of visceral, I can't even comprehend what was on the screen sort of reaction since I've seen a movie like maybe Inception, you know, like those kind of just paradigm shifting moments in the very end of a piece of entertainment that literally make you walk away and think about it for days. So that was kind of where I was first left with it on my first playthrough. How about yourself?
So my playthrough of Inside, kind of similar. I played Limbo very recently, actually, but I've always been kind of aware of Limbo. Weirdly enough, my first kind of interaction with Limbo was when Limbo first came out. G4 did kind of like some coverage on it, and I watched like the G4 review when G4 was still a thing. I think it was XPlay, I'm not sure. But I watched their review, and I was like, oh, cool. It's a side-scroller. And we don't get many of those nowadays, because I think at that time it was like, what, 2008?
It was 2008.
Yeah, 2008. And that was kind of like, it was the earlier, indie was very different. The indie space is very different than it is now, where we didn't really get any big indie games, really, on consoles at least. And the ones that we got were part of Xbox Live Arcade, and I don't think we had that many big ones on PlayStation or whatever name that they were given on PlayStation, but
right.
Yeah, like it was a weird thing seeing it covered on G4, and I was like, that looks really cool, and I really want to try that, but I don't have an Xbox, and so I can't. But when it came to PlayStation 4 specifically, I tried it out, and I was like, dude, this is awesome. this is exactly like what I thought it was going to be, and it was amazing. And I don't know if I'd say Limbo is like one of my favorite games ever, but it is like, as far as great games I've played, it's one of them. And it's one of the, it's, I think other games can look to Limbo for how to make a game, how to design puzzles, how to create atmosphere.
I think that's why it sticks out so much in people's mind, is because it has such a specific design aesthetic and a specific art aesthetic that it's very easy to, when someone says Limbo, for you to picture in your head and remember what Limbo is. It's not something that's forgettable, and there's a lot of forgettable games that come out, you know?
Yeah, and it's a special game, too. Like, I have a thing for games that do things differently, and Limbo is one of those games where it came out in 2008 at a time where no other games were doing the things that Limbo was doing, and it did what it was setting out to do so, so well. The puzzles, like, I mean, at that time, probably felt perfect, like, the design, all that stuff. It's weird now, after playing Inside, trying to go back and praise Limbo, because, like, Inside is so good, it's such a step up. But they're both, like, amazing games. Like, if I played Limbo when it first came out, and I played it in a vacuum, like, I would have been blown away.
Right.
And I come now to Inside, and I play it, and also, like, I get that similar feeling of when I played Limbo, but even more so, like, there's so much detail put in the game. There's so much contextual stuff. Like, when you're first, like, when you're running into the cornfields and stuff, right before you enter the cornfields, there's like a fence that separates, like, the area, the kind of outside area of the cornfield and the inside area of the cornfield. And, like, I was thinking, oh, okay, I'm gonna hop over the fence, but your character just kind of climbs through.
Yep.
And does, like, a specific animation. You can see that kind of thing throughout the game. And it's so cool to see every facet of a game thought about to a point where it feels flawless. And it feels like, I don't really like describing games as perfect,
right,
but Inside does what it sets out to do, I think, perfectly.
Yeah.
And flawlessly, at least near flawlessly. And so, yeah,
Inside,
amazing. Yeah, go ahead.
I think what Inside is, all of the goals it accomplishes, It refined. I mean, when you think about a game that's 3.5 hours long, that was 6 years in development, you can only imagine how many times a specific sequence was played and how many times it was changed to make it so that exactly what the designers had in mind was going to happen to all players. And I think a very good example of that is when you're in the submarine at this point, and it's the very first time you get a glimpse of that little mermaid child that's underwater.
Mm-hmm.
The first time I played it, you come out of a room, and I think you either get back into your submarine, or you flipped a switch and you come back, and on, like, the bottom left corner or the bottom right corner is that mermaid child, and it, like, darts away. And the first time I saw it, it startled me, right? And I was like, oh my God, what was that? Then I was playing the game again for my girlfriend because I wanted to show her it, and the same exact moment, it startled her in the exact same way. And I don't think it's just a matter of they kind of got lucky with that. I really do think that every point in time where there was supposed to be a scare, there was supposed to be an emotion that they wanted to get across, I think that they probably made it so that everyone was going to feel that. And they executed on every piece of their vision, you know?
Yeah, everything in that game was purposeful, it feels like.
Yes.
And even like talking about getting startled, like all the death sequences.
Oh, my God, man.
I remember the first time, my first few times getting killed in Inside, it startled. Actually, I was startled almost like throughout the game when it came to deaths. Like when you're getting torn apart by the dogs, it's jarring. When you're getting shot by the men, it's jarring. When you're going through the sequence with the fans underwater and you're in, like, the fans start spinning and you have to, like, figure out how to, like, bypass the fans and you get cut in half. Every single... like, most of the death sequences in the game are very, like, oh my God, did I just watch what I just watched? And I think part of it is because it's, like, a little boy and you're not used to seeing a little boy torn apart like that. And also, I think even if it was, like, a grown man, just the game isn't trying to be funny, it feels like. The game is trying to, like, be serious and, I don't know, it has a certain tone to it where you don't expect that kind of, like...
I think, I think you're right. I mean, I think there is a sense of dark comedy there where, you know, a lot of what a joke is and what a punchline is setting up expectations and then defying those. And you're not really expecting to see a lot of what you see in these death animations. So when you do, it is like a guffaw, as if like, oh my God, I can't believe they went there, you know, and you're taken aback every time. And something I want to kind of nerd out real quick about, especially in the animations and more specifically the death animations, something that I think has been lost a little bit in the conversation here is I've heard some players just say like, well, they didn't really add much to the game. It's like a prettier version of Limbo. It doesn't really do much different. Where I think a lot of that time and effort was spent was in making every animation in the game is basically perfect. And I really, around my third or fourth playthrough, I was playing with the death sequences in the beginning of the game to kind of see how they would differ. And there's a moment where there's a man with like a rifle, and if you run out in front of him, he'll shoot you down. And depending on the way that the boy falls to the ground when he is shot, it will change the animation for him. So the first time it happened, he fell and none of his limbs came underneath his body. They were all kind of splayed out in front of him. And when he hit the ground, he kind of like moved one arm up to clutch at the dirt to kind of drag himself away before finally dying. Then the second time I did it, his arm fell underneath him. And this time his arm caught his body. And then his left arm was the one that kind of grabbed for the dirt, and his right one was holding the weight of his body. And if you play with each death sequence in that kind of way and try to get the boy into slightly different situations, the game will always react to you and make it as if it was supposed to do that. And it was that level of detail that really, it was like, no matter what the player does in this game, the game is going to hold that up for them, and it's going to make any reaction seem as if it were scripted exactly the way that you saw it.
Interesting.
Considering how much animation and how many death scenes there are in the game and how many just animations in general that end up being contextualized, it's incredibly impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, like, going into the game, I wasn't expecting what I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest. I was expecting an upgraded Limbo.
Well, they didn't tell you anything, you know?
Yeah, they didn't really... I didn't even realize this game was a game until it was out.
Right.
Like, I remember seeing it at E3, but I kind of, like... I wasn't really paying... I didn't even know it was Playdead. I didn't know Playdead was the same people that made Limbo.
Right.
That's how much I didn't really know about this game.
Sure. And what's crazy is some of the final moments in the game are, like, shown in the marketing. And you would just have no idea because you have no context, you know?
Yeah. When was the point in which you realized that this game was a great game, or even like an amazing, like phenomenal game?
Sure. So I have a good bit of here that I want to touch on when it comes to narrative, because I kind of live in tension with the focus on narrative in video game discussion these days. And I do want to explicitly talk about how gameplay tells the story in this game, which is why it's so incredible. But outside of that, the moment when I was just playing, when I said, this is unlike anything I've ever played before, was, and then here's the big spoiler, right? At the very, like, the 30 minutes before the end mark of the game, you get sucked into this blob creature. And when it first happens, it's like, whoa, what? Okay, I'm all right. I'm this weird fucking blob thing now. And you start playing as this blob, and out of next thing you know, the feel of the game, like the kinetic just connection between your hands, the controller, and what you see on screen shifts. And now the avatar that you're controlling has all of this weight, all of this momentum, and just controls similarly but feels absolutely different than the boy did. And when you start getting into the meat of the action with the blob, you can feel that difference in weight. And it was whenever you had that box and you had to light the box on fire and then with the box throw it over the sprinklers, there was such a momentum to that sequence, and it just felt so perfect that they didn't have to tell me what to do or anything. The game was just so eloquently designed that I knew what to do, and it felt so good to do it, and it was so exhilarating because of the momentum that when the game finally came to a close and all of that momentum stopped, it was almost like I would, like, had to catch my breath and say, like, that was one of the best roller coasters I've ever been on, you know? And that was sort of the moment that solidified the entire experience with that end cap of just, I can't believe how exhilarating this was because of how good it felt, you know?
Awesome. Yeah, like for me, I think it was a point in which you're outside. I can't remember exactly where you're at, but you're at this area, and basically it's like this wind of force, like every few seconds, kind of blows past you. And I don't know, it's a weird way of describing it, but if you play the game, you know what I mean. Like, almost like shockwaves, I think is the best way to describe it. Like these shockwaves come through every few seconds, and it's very powerful. And like if you're not walking, if you're not hiding behind one of the pillars or whatever, you get like blown up.
You get fucking annihilated.
Yeah, but that was the point in the game where I was like, "What's happening in this place?" And I was really like, I was interested in the story when I saw like the mind controlled people, and I was like, "Okay, cool, this is gonna be like one of those. This is gonna be interesting." But the more and more I played the game, and the further I got into the facilities, I was kind of like, "What is this? What is this?" And the moment the shockwaves happened, I was like, "Dude, what is this?" Like I think that was kind of the shift into like, this is like science fictiony to like this is like supernaturally, like,
yeah,
because like the shock, I mean, if we're speaking about genres, like the shockwaves can be kind of defined by some kind of sciencey thing, but playing it seems so over the top and so jarring and so like out there that you're kind of like, whoa, what is this? And then from there into I can't remember what was next, the sort of weird gravity stuff with the water, where like you have all these bodies kind of hanging upside down, to go from that to there, and like the parts with the mermaid and these things that made the environment in the facility get weirder and weirder. I really like that, and that kind of blew my mind the more I got into it. And the more I try to piece together in my mind, what is the narrative? What am I doing here? Why am I trying to either break into this place or run from these people?
That's what's so cool is when you first start, you think you're running away, but the whole time you're breaking in, you know? And
yeah,
I just love that little, you don't realize that until you realize that. And it's just really cool, you know?
Yeah. And the more and more you play the game, the more questions you get.
Yeah.
Which is a really cool thing, and most of the time I'd hate that, but in this particular game, the way they did it and the way they pulled it off was very impressive and very, very cool. I had some thoughts.
Yeah, so I enjoy how open-ended it is. You know, for me, it was more about just the theme and the atmosphere. It was more about the, like, in any given moment, I felt like I could be in a room with the boy, and it was almost as if I can picture this book being a novel, in that there was so much detail in the world that I could see someone saying like, okay, and then the boy was in a lab, all the chairs were flipped upside down, these things were hanging from the ceiling, and there's a door in front of him that he needs to blah, blah, you know, go on and on and on. And I think what that really speaks to is how well they were able to create a sense of place. And I think that's also kind of what you were getting at when you talk about even just those concussive blasts and having those, mm-hmm. just the sheer mystery draw you into the world even more. Because before that, you're in a room where you can hear the noise, but you don't know what it is. And the next thing you know, you open this huge blast door and you walk through the door, and it turns out that you're outside, and there is I think there's like a highway that you're walking under. And so you're like, is this like a world that's bombed out? You know, what is this place? And they never really give you those answers. And I really like the way that it feels like it's a stitched together sequence of environments that somehow are still coherent, as if, you know, almost like with any good song that has like time signature changes and such. There's usually a through line that you can follow with a single instrument that's kind of bringing you to the next part of the song. I felt like, and I can't put my finger on it, but I felt like this game was able to do that with each change in environment, where when you think back on it, it's not that it has like a cohesive reason as to why you're in each new place, but it almost feels dreamlike in the sense that when you have a dream and you're trying to explain it to somebody, you can't give them a reason as to why. You just know that, well, I was doing this, and then I was doing that, and the next thing you know, I was here, and it felt so weird. And I feel like you can talk about this game in the same exact ways. And something else that was just incredibly impressive was, you know, just the visual fidelity of the game, all of the time that they spent, like on the lighting, you know, like when you're in the water and there's light and just the dust particles that are in there and the way that light plays off of the boy and that the bubbles pop out of his mouth and stuff. There's a cartoonish realism to it that blows my mind. And it was incredible to me how some of the environments almost looked like little dioramas in their proportions and in their sort of like disjointedness with actual reality. But at the same time, you would come into these spaces that were so massive, and the game was able to communicate to you such a sense of scale. And I think the moment that you were talking about earlier with those concussive blasts in this giant open room or furnace or wherever you are is a great example of that. There's also a few scenes in the submarine where you're just in these huge spaces and you feel tiny. And it's not necessarily easy to communicate scale like that. And they did an awesome job at it. Anytime a game creates an environment and it feels more like a facade, like just a play space, I feel like it's okay to just have a play space in order to have gameplay, but it's whenever you really sell a world that you're going to engross players even more, you know, and that's kind of an obvious thing to say, but the fact that every hatch in the game felt like there was something underneath it, and oftentimes there was something underneath it, it just felt like a more cohesive picture, and therefore it drew you into the game even more. And it's just incredible how well it was able to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think one thing that was cool, and I think that kind of touches on what you were saying earlier, is that the game is just one shot. Like, yeah. if you don't die, like, there's no cuts, there's nothing. It's just one long
no
sequence.
No load screens.
Yeah, and that sort of lends itself well to the fact that, like, you're here in one area where you're outside in the core fields, and the next second you're inside of this mysterious place, the next second you're underwater, next second you're getting chased by dogs, and it has so many, like, it kind of reminds me of Uncharted, where people love Uncharted because of these set pieces, and people love Call of Duty single player because of these set pieces of things that are happening. And, like, in Uncharted, you can be on this train, and you go from the back of this train, and you're shooting people, and throughout this, everything's happening, and all of a sudden, like, you're hanging off a cliff, and Sully's trying to save you, and blah, blah, blah. And there's these huge things that are happening. Inside does kind of the same thing, except, like, it's in the 2D space. Like, these sort of catered small experiences of, I fall underwater. Oh, wow, there's a mermaid thing. Okay, the mermaid's thing's chasing me. And even, like, talking about the ending, like, that whole sequence felt like a huge event. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that whole thing, like, and it's funny because it does a combination of things that I think the accumulation of them sort of makes the whole experience amazing. And so you go into that ending tank and you're like, okay, what is this thing? All of a sudden you get sucked in. At that time, you're, like, confused, and you're kind of, like, very much just wondering, like, okay, what's happening? What's going to happen? Like, what is all of this? And it's just, like, you're filled with wonder. And then from there, you kind of become the thing, and you break out, and all of a sudden you're playing. And so, like, at the same time, you're wondering, okay, what is all it was? What's happening right now? Oh, I guess I can control this. I can control the boy. Okay, I wonder what's going to happen. And there are crazy things happening, so many things happening at once in these moments, and you're getting filled with so much emotion and so much different kind of feedback that the accumulation of all of it kind of makes the game amazing.
Yep, absolutely.
You had thoughts. I don't know if you touched on all of it, but you said you had thoughts on sort of the gameplay and narrative and how it sort of comes together and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And did you want to speak on that at all?
Yeah, we can kind of get started on that. One thing I want to do also mention about just the blob sequence in general is there was a sense of, and I think this also just kind of fleshes out the overall believability of this world and just kind of the themes of, you know, you don't really know what's going on in this world or this story, but it feels like it's communicating some sort of like science gone too far or just oppressiveness of people or, you know, experimentation and such like that. And the blob, man, the sound design with the blob and like just the cries of like anguish and pain the whole time you're controlling it were so off-putting. And that's another moment that kind of sticks out and makes this game feel so distinct, but also the animation with the blob whenever you're carrying like the big wooden beam and stuff. Like, no matter where you are, whenever you like press X to grab it, every hand on there, no matter what direction you're facing, will start to grab it and move it in just the perfect way, and it'll put it up above itself. And I can only imagine how long it took the people at Playdead to get that to look and feel as smooth as it did.
Like, I remember
it was nuts,
like at the end sequence when you're getting the box and you're like throwing it over, you're putting it on fire and you're throwing it over the sprinklers, like that stuff. And I didn't fail it. I wish I failed it on purpose so I could see what happens if like you don't get the sprinkler, or you miss the sprinklers, or you miss catching the box and stuff. But like, I nailed that part perfectly. And so like, you just see, it's almost like a Pixar movie, right? Where there's just so much, like, it feels like there's so much attention put into it. And I grab the box on one side of my body, then my, all my hands are like passing it to the next hand until it gets to the other side of my body. Then I throw it up, throw it over the sprinkler, catch it, and like everything on my body looks so active, and everything kind of is kind of working together. It's so weird.
And so, yeah, that's so awesome. It's those kind of details that I want people who kind of think that this game didn't do much to top Limbo aside from make it prettier to really look at, because what the game is doing on a micro detail level is really quite impressive. And the last thing I want to touch on before we get into the narrative side of things, which we've touched on a little bit here and there, so it won't go too long, but I want to talk about the sound design. The sound effects alone are pretty incredible. If you are playing with headphones, it just fills your head with sound, and it all is just expertly recorded and mixed. And what I really loved about the sound was it would sort of modulate the pace of the game. And what I was realizing was the boy can run, and when he's running, he'll be out of breath and you can hear him panting, and then you can slow him down and he'll catch his breath. And what was cool is when there were these moments of really high action and a lot of intensity, you not only had, you know, barking dogs, which were very abrasive on your ears, which put you on edge, or you would have like very shrill strings whenever the mermaid was like trying to chase you and stuff. There were things that would overwhelm your auditory senses. And a lot of the times in these sequences, you as the boy were running as fast as you can. And so by the time you would leave those sequences and the sound would start to drown out, you would realize then at that point, the only thing you could hear is the boy out of breath. And at that moment you would say, okay, I'm safe now. And I would always like pull off of the thumbstick and let the boy catch his breath. And I was like, this is so cool. You know, like this is the game pacing me and making me feel like the boy just by giving me the sound and auditory feedback of his breath. And the fact that I couldn't tell I was still running until everything else had drowned out, and that was kind of the last cue that it was time to slow down again, I just thought that was brilliant, you know?
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, so one thing that bothers me that I kind of touched on earlier is sort of, I think there is the consensus right now in video game taste to me is that people want to play a good story. And that's fine. Like, anybody can play a video game for any reason they want. I just think it's important to recognize that games, first and foremost, are not storytelling devices. They are aesthetic objects that are meant to be played. And gameplay, which is the core trait, the one thing about video games that no other thing has, is inherently in itself meaningless. Like, there is no meaning to your fingers moving on a controller. Like, there is nothing about pressing B that feels like kicking a soccer ball in FIFA, right? And so I can acknowledge that video games can tell stories, but I think they only are really utilized, I think the medium is only truly utilized when it is that core trait of gameplay that is telling the story. And I think that is exactly what Inside is doing, is it engages the narrative through the act of you playing it. And so what I want to do real quick is compare Inside to Unravel, which came out earlier this year. I'm sure most of your listeners are probably familiar with it, but that's the game that's about Yarny. It's a 2D puzzle platformer. They're very similar in a lot of regards. In fact, their mechanics are almost identical at times, but it's the framing of the mechanics that make Inside stand out. And so if you, and by the way, I'm I'm getting a lot of these ideas from an essay written by a developer at Frictional Games. So if you're interested in what I'm about to talk about, you can read more by typing in Frictional Games into Google and typing in Inside Essay. So I want to go ahead and give credit there. And what this guy does is he compares the beginning of Unravel and Inside. And he says, in the beginning of Unravel, you're Yarny, you step out of like a garden, and he gets startled by butterflies, and then he climbs a bucket, and then he uses his yarn as a lasso, and eventually he finds an apple that he must use to get over some objects. And it kind of makes sense given the environment that he's in, but there's really no story meaning to anything that he's doing. In fact, most of the story that is told in Unravel is kind of told, it's just kind of given to you at certain points in the game. If you compare that with the beginning of Inside, where what you have is a boy who jumps down from some rocks, he's in a dark forest, and then he begins walking and he's balancing across a tree over a chasm. At that point, he comes to a blockade that he full of barbed wire that he slips under and goes through. Then he sees a truck full of odd figures that he only gets a glimpse of before the truck is closed and drives away. At that point in time, he continues through the forest and he finds some mysterious metallic pods. He gets chased by some people that he has to sneak by. And then finally, he comes to a wall that is made out of concrete with barbed wire on top, and he has to use a refrigerator in the environment to get over that wall. And already the sequence of events right there kind of tells you about the game's narrative, and it sets up things that you're going to see later in the game. And it's not so much with Unravel where you just kind of have some obstacles to get over because it's a game and that's what you're supposed to get over. All of those objects in front of the boy have context within the narrative, and the fact that you are the protagonist playing this one, you are the one who is moving the story by moving left and right. And so let me flip over onto the other side here. There's a few transitions in gameplay as well that make narrative sense, where there's the moment where you get into the submarine, and that moment, that transition, is actually presented as a puzzle. You have to sit there and you have to wait and you have to sneak by this guy who gets out of the submarine so that you can get in it. And it's a really simple puzzle, but it makes you take an active role in that transition, whereas another game could just have easily made the submarine the start of a new level, for instance. Mm-hmm. But now you have a reason, you have a understanding of why you're in that submarine. You get to say, I snuck past this guard and then I stole a submarine. And that's much more meaningful than I would climb some buckets and I pushed an apple around, right? The other thing that is really impressive is that, one, like you were kind of mentioning, you control the boy from beginning to end. There's a few moments where you can't control the boy anymore, but those make sense within the story, like when he passes out. And they take control away from you a little bit. And all of the controls are extremely intuitive. And it's the feel of the game that I think really connects you to the narrative most of all. And whenever you are up against a wall, for instance, depending on the pressure that you put on the stick, the boy will keep depressing his body against it more and more until finally his cheek is on the wall. And there's just like a very subtle, almost like innocence to that, that I found that my very small, like, I felt so connected to this boy because I was able to control him to such a minute level, that it brought me in a more just convincing way, you know? It connected me to that world a little bit more. The other thing we were talking about earlier was the adaptive animation, and what's really cool about the animation in Inside is you'll come to sequences where the boy will begin to sneak. And just by the boy changing his animation, you know to change the way you're playing the game. You know now, I need to be sneaking right now. I don't need to be caught. Simply because the boy is now ducking and trying to hide himself. And it's not like, okay, well, if I were to just come up here and get killed by these guys, now I learned that I need to sneak. It's the boy kind of gives you an understanding that it's time to sneak now. And there's also, I think, a moment where you get like a flaming board and you're the boy, whenever the dogs get close to the boy, when you have the flaming board, he starts waving them off, and now without telling you anything about the torch, without telling you anything about the board, you know that that mechanic works. And they don't allow you to take the torch into any other areas that where you're not supposed to have it, so you're never confused about what you're supposed to do with the torch. You just know that the boy is going to fight them off because of that. And it's a small little detail, but it's something that the game doesn't have to communicate to you because they did it in such a subtle, intuitive way that it just works and it feels really good. The other thing I really want to mention as well is, you know, it's one thing to get cutscenes in a game as kind of like an end cap to a chapter or maybe even a reward for a sequence. You know, a lot of people will sometimes mention Uncharted and say like, well, you're just kind of fighting through enemies until you get to the next cutscene and you fight until you get the next cutscene. Some games, and a lot of games are doing this now, will kind of put the cutscenes in the background, so you still kind of have control of your player, but you need to kind of wait around until the people are done talking and then you move on. Inside does this, but it does this in a way that gives way more context to the narrative in that the cutscenes will happen in the background, but they are still a part of your world. And there's a sequence when, like, a big door opens and this like forklift comes to grab a shipment of those people. And if you, it's kind of like a cutscene, you're kind of just getting information about what's going on, and you can just sit there and hide and watch it. Or if you run in front of these people, they're going to get you, they're going to kill you. And there's a few instances of that in the game where what's happening in the background will react to you if you move. And that little bit of level of agency and interactivity, I think, goes a long way in making you a part of the narrative more so than I've really seen any other game. It's also something that I've wanted to point out, you know, when we talk about it. The last thing that I wanted to kind of say, and it's a question that I think a lot of people won't ask themselves, is why is this game a puzzle game? And you kind of, the answer that first comes to mind is, well, because it's a puzzle platform, like it's a puzzle platforming game. That's just what it is. But why do puzzles work out well for a game that is supposed to be kind of driven by narrative? Because by all intents and purposes, they could have tried to tell this story in a different genre. You know, this was a new game. They could have done what they wanted. So why do they choose puzzles? And I think the answer is because when you have a puzzle game, you are then forcing players to do things in a sequence of events that they must perform in order to push the story forward. And I don't want to say that just because they chose puzzles in this game, it makes them better at telling stories. I do want to say that these puzzles, I think, were crafted so well that none of them took away from the experience by making you try to do, like, in Limbo, like we were talking about. I recently replayed it. It's a lot of trial and error, and much like magic and with magicians, you never do the same trick twice, because once you've kind of shown, you've done your misdirection, you've done your sleight of hand, people are now looking for the trick and they're going to try to figure it out. When you see the same sequence of events in a video game, you start to lose the narrative context and you really just start seeing the code. You start seeing the systems. And this game does an excellent job at only giving you a few things in a given scene to interact with. And because of that, you always know that if I can interact with this thing, it's going to be a part of the solution. And not only that, but there's only a handful of things that you can interact with. And that's like boxes, switches, you know, there's a couple floor, like, depressing switches, which are like the absolute gamiest things that kind of don't make sense in the world, but I kind of forgive them. But the thing is what it allows you to do is it allows you to plan. So anytime that you're walking through a level, you can see towards the right as you're looking with your eyes automatically, okay, this is the challenge. This is what I'm probably going to need to do. So I'm going to go ahead and start doing it. Much like in the same way when you play like a Super Mario game, you are automatically looking to the right and you're thinking to yourself, I'm going to need to jump here. I'm going to have to get around this guy. I probably shouldn't be touching that guy. And it's really important to have a game, for a game to allow you to plan, because it allows you to take more part in it. It allows you to craft your strategy. And once you have that strategy and you execute it, that's what makes gameplay feel really good. And so the fact that this game only has a few objects that are honestly fairly easy to point out, and they do it without ever telling you how to play the game. There's never a quick time event above like a lever or anything. You just know that you can do these things. Its puzzles are excellently, they just feel great because of that. And so I think when you take all of that as a whole, the fact that every box, every item in the game has a purpose, it also makes sense in the context of the world, in the context of the narrative, and it's always you, the player, who are moving the narrative forward. That is why when I walked away from this game, I said, this is what video games are. Like, this is what the medium is and what it can be. And that's kind of my piece on Inside, you know?
Nice. Awesome. Dude, that's awesome. Like, you pretty much touched on everything, I think, that made me love Inside. And stuff that I didn't even know, that I didn't realize that's why I loved Inside, but it is kind of why I love Inside. Like, for that last point, even as far as, like, the limited objects that you can interact with, like, it brought to mind a part that I kind of got stuck on through my second playthrough, which is the part where you're... It's like early on when you first kind of learn how to mind control people, and one of the dudes that you're mind controlling is like on top of this like railing, and he's moving you with like this cart, and like you're below and like you're hanging, and he's like moving you, and there you get to this one part where the cart can't pass like this closed door, and you have like floor beneath you. And there's also a box, and there's a pad that the box that if you put the box on top of the pad, then it opens the door in which the car can go through. And basically, your options are interact with the box or control the body and figure out what you can do there. But you have very, very limited options. And I remember just sitting there like, I solved this last time. Why can't I think of the solution now?
Yeah.
And it was something that I solved very easily last time, where I got to it and I was like, oh, yeah, that's easy. But I got to it the second time and I was like, what am I missing here? And I tried everything possible with the box and moving it back and forth, because you need the box in order to get back up to the mind control thing that you hang from.
Right.
You'd have to if you play the game, you know the puzzle. You hopefully know the puzzle I'm talking about.
Yep, if you I know exactly what you're talking describe, about.
But yeah. But yeah, it took me a while before I realized, oh, there's another platform I can hop of that's like back there that I can just hop onto and go back and do the thing. But the limited options, I think one complaint that many people have with puzzle games is that they're too frustrating, and adventure games, like, it's a different genre, but games like adventure games are very open-ended as far as like what you can do. And like, I remember playing Broken Age last year and being like, okay, well, I'm gonna make every single thing in my inventory interact, and I'm gonna touch every single clickable thing until I figure out the solution to the next part of the game.
Yeah,
and puzzle games can be like that sometimes, but it's not fun at all. And in Inside, the limited amount of things you can do allows you to be able to test out literally all your options until you're like, okay, I gotta step back and figure out what I'm doing wrong, and then usually immediately you figure it out, or you quit and you come back and you figure it out. There's no part in Inside where I had to go and check a guide. Like, I got stuck at some parts, but usually it's my fault when I got stuck. Like, the first part I got stuck on for like a good 10 to 15 minutes was the part where early on in the game there's like a lever that like pulls up this pulley with this wood, this like long wood shaft, I don't know what to call it, and like you can push this thing back and forth, and basically what you need to do is you need to pull the lever up so that the pulley pulls the wood shaft up so you can go back and hop onto the shaft and hop onto the next part. And I was stuck on that part for like a good 15 minutes because I didn't realize that I could make the jump. And so, like, really, like, all of the parts in which I got stuck on, which probably many people get stuck on and Inside, are probably your fault. But it's designed in such a way that, I don't know, it makes it work. Like, none of the puzzles are too easy. None of them are too hard. They're, like, the perfect difficulty for where you're at. And it never
feels like you're arbitrarily trying to guess at what the designer was thinking.
Yeah.
More of just like, okay, what am I supposed to do? You know? And I think when you talk about adventure games as well, I think that kind of shows that lack of planning that a player has, and why that doesn't feel good and why Inside does feel good, is because when you have just a big collection of objects that you know are going to somehow interact with each other, you really can't plan for what you're going to do. You just have to start trial and error. And there's like almost no trial and error here in Inside.
Yeah. And so we got to wrap up soon.
Sure
but
thing.
Chase, what? First of all, what is what's your favorite part of Inside? We kind of touched on the part that made you realize it's like a great game, but what would you say is like your favorite part of the game?
Well, you know, I think that in sequence with the Blob is probably one of the most exhilarating things I've played in years. But I, another thing that I want to add, there's, you know, this game is full of, I think, very memorable moments. And one of the first moments in the game that I really, like, kind of lost my breath and was like, this is beautiful, was when you get into the submarine and you have to break through a wall. And when you do, the camera pulls out. And you realize that you're in this massive area of water, and your little submarine, as it's going through the water, almost looks like a cell in a petri dish. And I'm like, I was just totally blown away. You know, I was just in this huge screen of water in this massive environment as my little bitty submarine is just moving across the screen ever so slightly. And I was just absolutely, from that point forward, just totally encapsulated.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah, I'd probably say, for me, my favorite part, hands down, is the anti-gravity stuff, where you walk into a room and you look around and you're like, okay, what are all these things? You see people kind of hanging, and then you look up and you're like, oh my God, what's happening? Yeah. Yeah. And so I really like Inside. You obviously like love it.
Yep. I love it.
And yeah, you loved it enough that you dive deep into it. And I appreciate you coming on and talking about it. Do you have any last thoughts as far as things that you want to get out, things that you want to kind of mention or anything like that?
Play this game and admire it for its small details. I think if you are playing this game looking for answers, you're missing the point. I think this game is more about how it feels. It's more about the questions that it asks rather than the answers that it gives. And I also do want to say that it is an excellently designed game, from the puzzles to the level design. I mean, there are moments where you go through a long sequence of events just to get back to where you are being blocked, and you'll jump off a platform, which will then put you in the water at the exact distance you need to be so that you can swim through a hole. And there's just like a feel of momentum and flow to the game that feels better than I've ever really experienced in a game in the last few years. And there's just a one-to-one connection with what's going on the screen in your hands. And that's a very rare and special thing. And so you should, I think, look at the game through that lens rather than I'm just playing a puzzle platformer and it's supposed to be crazy and it's supposed to give me this, you know, crazy story or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. So you've heard it here first, maybe probably not first, because you've probably watched other reviews and whatnot, but if you haven't played Inside, check it out, play it. Chase, thank you for coming on. Thank you for talking about Inside with
me. Thank you so much for having me, man. I hope we can do it again soon sometime.
Oh yeah, definitely. And it'll be very soon, because we're about to record the Persona thing.
That's true.
But if you're listening, thank you for listening. Once again, the OKB's podcast is a show where we talk about gaming news. Sorry, I butchered that because I'm not reading it directly. The OK Beast is a brand that's dedicated to games culture and looking at how games sit within our culture. The OK Beast podcast is a gaming-centric show where a couple of friends come together and talk about what's going on in our world. If you like that, subscribe to us on your podcast service of choice, visit OKBeast.com, and follow at OK Beast Now on Twitter. This has been Episode 7, our Inside spoiler cast. Make sure to be on the lookout next week. Next week, we're also keeping up the trend. I am at PAX this weekend, and so in order to make up for that, next week we're doing our Persona cast, Persona 4 spoiler cast. And so stay tuned, especially if you want to hear a little bit more from Chase, at Bodacious Chase on Twitter. Remember
that's
that.
Me.
Follow him. Check him out. And if you're listening to this podcast, and you're one of the people that listen to Chase's podcast, which is, remind me the name of it?
Witty Banter. The dopest show of all time.
Oh yeah. Thank you for checking us out. Hope you enjoyed. And be sure to check us out more in the future. We'll see you later. See you next week. Peace out.